You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 17th, 2010. This is episode 158. Barcodes, newsletters, and the NIV. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. The froggy voice behind the microphone is Martin Spriggs, and the beautiful voice on the other end of the Skype line is, of course, Sally Draper from snowy, sleepy eye, Minnesota.
Good morning, Martin. Sorry to hear that you're under the weather this morning. That's no fun.
Hopefully I'm on the upswing of this cold, so I'm looking forward to a little sleep. I've got my hot tea next to me, and just expect yourself to do a lot of the talking.
Oh, boy. What fun. And yes, you're right that it is snowy and sleepy eye. We had our first official snow this weekend, and it would be nice if it were the last one, but unfortunately it snowed again overnight here, so I think we're in for it for winter. But
you got your feet wet, so to speak. So.
That's right. That's right. Tried out the new boots.
Only five more months.
If we're lucky, yeah.
That's right. We haven't seen any yet, but it feels like winter, and certainly feels like winter inside my throat. But that's a whole nother story, and we've got some good stuff to talk about today. In fact, I was really overwhelmed with the response that we got when we proposed this topic on the Wells Tech Listserv.
Yeah, we are talking church and school newsletters today, and boy, we can't dilly-dally because we have so much to share. I'm very excited. I don't think I even counted them up. Well over 12 to 15 different congregations sent us their church and school newsletter, and took me a lot of work to just get all those posted out on the Wells Tech Wiki. But now we have a great resource to point people to, and this show as well will be a benefit as we explore all different avenues of church and school newsletters.
So where do we start?
Well, I think a good place to start would be just talking about the different software that you can use mm-hmm. to produce church and school newsletters. Right. And, you know, there's a plethora of options out there. Most traditionally, we're familiar with print newsletters. And typically, you're going to use some kind of desktop software to do your layout, bring in all your different articles, add different graphics, that kind of thing. And with all the examples we have to share, we see lots and lots of different ways that people do layout for their print newsletters. Probably one of the predominant pieces of software, at least on the Windows side, that people use is Microsoft Publisher.
Right.
And you'll hear today as we talk with Naomi Hinkle from Mount Calvary out in Redding, California, in our interview segment, that she's a Publisher fan and that Publisher comes with lots of bells and whistles to really help you have a professional layout. Of course, it's nice to be able to take advantage of built-in image libraries and color treatments and things like that. I think that makes the job a lot more fun and a lot more professional on the back end.
Yeah, if there's a sweet spot for Microsoft Publisher, which I would call kind of a low-end desktop publishing solution, it's fairly inexpensive. It probably is the in-house, what I would call an in-house newsletter concept, which is what a church or school newsletter really is. It usually doesn't get professionally printed. It's usually photocopied or print out in low volumes and then distributed. So I think the question in the minds of a lot of church and school secretaries then is, well, what's the difference between Publisher and, let's say, a word processor like Microsoft Word, which I think you can build a newsletter, and you can find even templates in Word format for newsletter building, but the two really function differently. A word processor works with a linear concept of pages, and the text and images flow from page to page. almost like a blog, you know, where you're putting an entry in and then you put the one below it and so on and so forth. You do have some page layout functionality, but that's really not its strong suit. If you really want fine control over the layout of a page and have mixed size columns and nice word wrapping and those kinds of things, Publisher really makes a lot of sense. Or if you want to take it up another notch, there are tools out there that are going to be in the $300 to $400 range, like Adobe InDesign or Quark Express, those kinds of things that even give you greater control. And I would say use those tools if you have a multi-page newsletter that ultimately is going to be professionally printed, as opposed to maybe what Publisher would do for you, which is, you know, a smaller newsletter, but some decent features.
And a couple to mention on the low end, that is the free open source end. Mm-hmm. In terms of word processing, you certainly could use OpenOffice and their companion product Draw, which comes in the OpenOffice suite. Or for page layout, there's Scribus and Page Plus, which are both free desktop publishing software packages that are available for download via the internet. And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes, as well as links to those Office templates you were talking about.
Yep.
You can get templates, like you said, for Word and for Publisher for you know, the layout of your newsletter. So you get a jump start. You don't have to do all the design work yourself. You can start with a template. And then there are some templates available for OpenOffice as well. So we'll include links to all of that in the show notes.
Yep. So we probably can't talk about newsletters today in the Web 2.0 world that we live in without talking about e-newsletters. And though that topic has come up on the show in the past, and it's probably fitting to plug in here some different tools that you can use to create newsletters almost exclusively online.
That's right, Martin, and then deliver them via email to your email list. And you can have lots of different flavors of this as well. The one that we've talked about primarily on the podcast is MailChimp at MailChimp.com, which allows you up to, I think, 3,000 or 5,000 free emails per month. And so for most Wells congregations, you would be able to fit under that limit and be able to use the tool completely free. Very professional tool. It has a lot of different templates, as we were talking about with the desktop publishing. Allows you to customize, pick out really professional color choices and things like that. And then it delivers. It gives you a lot of statistics on the back end as to how many people received it and actually opened it and clicked on the links you included and things like that. So you can't beat the price. The delivery is instantaneous. There's no printing or mailing or anything like that with the e-news. Another one in this arena is Constant Contact, and I know a lot of different Wells organizations are using it as well. And I'm not as familiar with the pricing over there, but we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and certainly the benefit of e-newsletters, obviously the cost, but another benefit is the ability to track, and that and we've talked about this in the past, the ability to analyze how you're doing, how is the newsletter doing, is it being read? And if so, what is being read? All of those tools that we mentioned allow for great analytics, and that's helpful to be a good steward of your time. Newsletters take a long time to put together. I speak from, you know, hearing my wife say how long it takes to put together a church or school newsletter. And at the end of the day, you have to ask, is it worth it? And this is one way to figure out whether anybody's actually reading it. Or you can also help yourself by determining what needs to be spruced up, you know, what needs to change, maybe switch things out so that it maybe is read.
Mm-hmm. Before we get away from this methodology kind of discussion with software resources and things, I wanted to throw in few links in the show notes for image resources. Now, again, a lot of these different software packages come with imagery available to you, but if you're looking to add a specific image, you know, to go along with an article that you're posting in your newsletter, you may be looking for other sources. And we have a pretty good list we've developed over the course of the podcasting history here, and just different free online clip art as well as photography resources that are open, and some of them free, I guess some of them not necessarily free, some of them may be paid for options as well,
right.
But we wanted to just include those links in the show notes so that you would have some options there if you're looking for image sources as well.
Okay.
And then you know, I guess now we could kind of transition into talking a little bit about the philosophy behind your newsletter or the communication plan. Will it be solely electronic versus print versions? Will you go with color versus black and white? And, you know, finally, will you do it on a monthly basis, or a lot of congregations are moving more toward weekly communication and even completely doing away with the monthly newsletter?
Right.
And then also, you know, who is your audience and knowing what they're looking for? Some congregations that sent us examples have specific newsletters just for outreach purposes. So they send one particular newsletter to their prospect list, which may be quite extensive depending on the location of the congregation. And so investing your time in doing an outreach-oriented newsletter may be worthwhile versus an internal members-only kind of newsletter. So a lot of different facets to your communication goals with your newsletter. Certainly with the e-news that we were talking about a few minutes ago, it makes it a lot easier to do things more rapidly, you know, so you can have the weekly news very easily distributed, and, you know, avoiding the cost of printing and the labor intensity of printing and distributing something on paper. Certainly you can use color more if it's electronic, but once you get into print versions, the color printing becomes very expensive very quickly, so you probably want to print most of the time, at least in black and white. Just different aspects of your delivery that you need to consider, and, you know, put some thought into what it is you're trying to communicate, how frequently you need to do it, who your audience is, those kind of questions. And then, of course, if you're going to go electronic, you know, delivering it in a pleasing way. So perhaps it's an e-news, like with MailChimp or Constant Contact. Maybe it's the print newsletter in PDF format, and you post it on your website for people to download from your website. I think you need to be really careful with your file size if you're going to be emailing out attachments. So you don't want to send your congregation you know, 5 megabyte files or whatever. If they're going to be huge, you probably want to post those in one place on your website and send people a link to it so they can download from the web. So just a lot of different considerations. It's not just a straightforward, oh, we're going to print the monthly newsletter these days.
Right. And when it comes down to it, I'm just looking at all of our notes here, and the thing that strikes me when you're considering a newsletter, which almost every organization has, is do whatever it takes to get it read. You know, whether that is chunking it out into weekly little sound bites, whether that's a more professional look, maybe that's color, maybe that's electronic, maybe that's print, maybe that's whatever it is, you have to figure out what the best approach is to getting it read, and then stick with that. And you may have to be flexible enough to determine for yourself that one way is not working, therefore we need to try another way. Because that's really what it comes down to with stewardship of your time. Because the message that you have, and this is all mostly internal communications, you've got to get the word out, and newsletters or bulletin announcements or whatever they are, the whole point is that people are listening and responding.
Absolutely. One other question that we got from a lot of the people that sent us in newsletters was how to avoid looking like a spammer. That's a big issue if you're going to be regularly sending out email to your congregation, and that's 200 or 300 or 400 email addresses.
You mean looking like a spammer from the email client's perspective, or from the person's perspective?
I think more from the email client's perspective.
So it's getting caught in a junk filter or something like that.
Exactly. Or even getting blacklisted that, right. Oh, this person sends out to 200 people on a regular basis. They must be sending out spam, right. Not something legitimate. So right. We're going to block them across the board on some blacklist somewhere. And so, you know, a lot of times even your email client that you use to send the email out will limit you to how many people you can address things to. Yep. And that kind of thing. I think using a tool like MailChimp or Constant Contact is going to be your outlet mm-hmm. for that. It's going to allow you to deliver your email professionally and not be burdened with the fact that it's coming from your specific email account, but yet it's coming from this service that's recognized as being a non-spamming service.
Right.
So, I think that's going to be the big solution
yep.
there.
Short of that, you know, what you can do is send out a message to all of your members to make sure that they're putting your church email address on their white list, which is essentially a list. Sometimes that's in the email client. Sometimes that's with an interface through the ISP or your internet service provider. So it's going to be different probably for each member. But that is another thing that you'll probably want to do is make sure that they're putting you in that safe sender's address list so that it doesn't trap that unnecessarily.
Okay. So if you are so inclined and looking for ideas, I definitely invite you to take a stroll through our office documents page on the Wells Tech Wiki mm-hmm. because we've posted just a plethora of newsletter examples there that are all over the board. You
yep.
can see some that are posted online, some that post using a email client, some that post via PDF format. You can see church newsletters, school newsletters. You can see outreach-oriented newsletters. And boy, that's how you really begin to get ideas for your own creations, is by looking at what other people do. And there's all different kinds yep. of layouts and things to look at as examples. So
yeah, there's
definitely
a good there's a good 20 of them there
mm-hmm.
For you to look at from about 14 different churches/schools. So boy, if you can't find ideas there, and sometimes the thing is not you're not looking necessarily at the designer layout, you're just looking at what to put in a newsletter.
Content
is king, absolutely. So take a look at these for those from that perspective as well. You know, are they including things that maybe I could think about including that would be intriguing to our members?
So we greatly appreciate the feedback that we received from everyone who shared their example newsletters. And if you have more to add, you're certainly welcome to create an account and add yours to the mix on the Wells Tech Wiki, or
yep.
send them our direction. Our email address is wellstech@wells.net, and we'll be happy to post them there as well.
And that Wells Tech Wiki address, wellstechwiki.wells.net, I think we linked to it off of our show notes page as well. I'm just looking at the list here, Sally, and one of those newsletters comes from Mount Calvary in Redding, California.
That's right. We were privileged to talk with Naomi Hinkle, who's a volunteer in that congregation, doing the bulletins and newsletters there at Mount Calvary, and she does a beautiful job with them. You have to check out her example newsletter. She does it in Microsoft Publisher. She also sent us a time and talent survey, and that's posted a little further down that wiki page, and she did a great job with it as well.
Awesome,
and
yeah.
We had the opportunity to talk with Naomi. Actually, I'll say I had the opportunity to talk to her. You listened in, but
I was a listener. Yes,
the challenge. So,
this was just yesterday.
You guys tune in now and take a listen to our interview with Naomi from Mount Calvary in Redding, California. Joining us today for the Wells Tech Podcast is Naomi Hinkle from Mount Calvary in Redding, California. Welcome, Naomi.
Hi.
It's great to have you with us today. Perhaps you can get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself and your congregation and what you enjoy doing out there in California.
Well, we enjoy living in God's country. We don't think Wisconsin has all of it. We live here in Northern California. We're surrounded by snow-capped mountains. There's many large lakes here for recreation and dozens of rivers. It's a really beautiful area, and yet the Redding area rarely gets snow. So we have all the beauty and the recreation around us. but we don't have to shovel it. We really like that.
And what size congregation is Mount Calvary?
Mount Calvary has about 300 baptized, about 225, 230 communicants.
Very good. And you're served by one pastor there?
Yes, we are, Pastor Brian Peckman.
All right. Very good. Well, it's great to hear a little bit about the West Coast Wells Tech listeners, and we're happy to add you to our Wells Tech listenership. And you wrote to us recently to share a couple of things from your church office. You are the church secretary there at Mount Calvary, is that correct?
Not really. I'm a volunteer, and
I do the
newsletter and the bulletin weekly, and help pastor with secretarial tasks, but I do it all from my home, really.
That's awesome.
We communicate by computer.
Very good. I know that feeling. I work from my home as well, so good for you. So what you wrote to us with were a couple of documents that you're responsible for then, the monthly newsletter as well as a time and talent survey. So I was quite impressed when we dug in and took a look at your newsletter. It's a beautiful layout, and so we wanted to talk to you and find out a little bit more about what software you use and how you learned to use it, if you went to classes or, you know, what experience you have that helped you in creating your newsletter.
Well, I've been using Microsoft Publisher since 2002, and I'm self-taught. I've never taken a class in it, though I did have graphic design classes back in the 70s and early 80s, back when there was simply black ink on paper. And so that's where I got my start, and so it's lots of fun for me to use all the color I can get my hands on today, and I enjoy doing that very much.
And I'm assuming maybe you use the most current version of Publisher. Are you on 2007 or 2010 maybe?
Okay. It's 2007 that we're using now. When Pastor and I first started communicating together, he had one version and I had another version, and that caused difficulties when we would transfer files back and forth. Images and data would shift. And so last fall, we upgraded so that we both have the same version. And now life is really good.
That makes a big difference, I bet.
It does.
And as far as layouts and things, does Publisher come with templates that you like to use?
It does have many sample newsletter. That's what I use the most. But it has brochures and postcards, letterhead, just about anything you would need for business, it has. And you can tweak the layouts. You can choose color patterns so that the one we happen to use has blue and teal. Those are the dominant colors, but it gives you like five colors automatically, and it will self-code it, color code it for you if you want. And you can say this element is always to be teal, this element is always to be blue. And so when I want to highlight text in an article, then I choose one of those colors so it all looks uniform, and yet it pops a little more and draws your eye to, oh, this is the main idea here.
So they're taking out some of the guesswork, and it makes it very professional looking when you make use of those design elements and everything.
Yes.
So
another
thing I noticed.
Go ahead. It's without a lot of skill on my part. The software does it all. I just get to pick the words and the pictures.
We'll have to keep that a secret between you and I, because that's not obvious when you look at your newsletter. It looks very skillfully done. So, another thing I noticed was your use of graphics. You have graphics all throughout, and I just wondered if you have any recommended sources. I know church secretaries and the like are always looking for good sources for graphics, and just wondering where you come upon a lot of your graphics.
Well, the religious ones, I actually go to Wells Flickr and get a lot of stuff there. I wish there was more, and I hope people keep downloading, because there are some great photos when I especially want something religious. If I need just a generic photo, like people sitting around the table having dinner, Microsoft Publisher has those already embedded. There's a huge library that comes with the software of great images. When you search their library of images, you can say, I want clip art, I want photographs only. You know, you have choices. And they're really high quality images through Publisher, and so I can enlarge them, crop them, shrink them, whatever I need to do for my purpose.
Very good. That kind of makes a case for investing in Publisher as a platform, the huge library that comes along for the ride. That's a blessing.
Yes.
I'm guessing do you use Publisher for your bulletin as well? You mentioned you do bulletins too.
Yes, Publisher for that also.
Awesome. So you've got that same collection to make use of for bulletin artwork as well. So very good. And then you alluded a little bit earlier to your love of color and the fact that Publisher does a lot of cool color tricks for you. Anyone who opens up your newsletter is going to be impressed right away that you really do make use of a lot of color. And I'm wondering how you distribute all that color. It must cost you money if you go about printing this. So are you totally electronic out there in California, or do you print as well your newsletter?
We do print about 2 dozen copies in black and white for those that do not have a computer. The vast majority of members receive an emailed PDF file of the newsletter from Pastor. When I have finished it, I send it to Pastor, and he creates a brief cover memo and attaches the PDF file and emails it to the majority of the members.
Do you have any feedback on how many open it and use it electronically? Do they like getting it electronically?
I think they like it. We tried to find out when we... Here's another task I do, the church directory. When we did the last request for update on addresses and phone numbers and stuff, we also included in the survey form, do you get the newsletter electronically? Do you read it? Do you pass it on to other members? Do you print it out for other members of your family to read? Trying to get an idea. And most of them simply read it on the screen. And if they find something of value that other members in their family would be interested in, they may forward it to their children or whatever, you know.
Okay. And I guess one thing that's worth mentioning is somewhere along the line you convert from Publisher format to PDF, which makes a lot of sense. PDF is a great format for distributing electronically and kind of universally read. I'm guessing if you sent it out in Publisher format, not many people would have Publisher on their computers for reading.
Correct.
So,
and if it was in Publisher when we sent it out, I would be afraid they could change it.
Ah, you know, there you go.
Change the contact, and that would not be good.
PDF kind of locks it down then.
Yes. And Publisher has an actual save feature to PDF, so you can take the file as it is while you still have it open and save it as a PDF right in Publisher.
Makes it super easy. Very good. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, you sent us a second document, and that's your time and talent survey. You guys have been going through a time and talent survey process just in the last month or so. So it was a little bit different than what I expected a time and talent survey to look like. You took a different approach to it. Can you tell us a little bit about the thought process as you put together your time and talent survey?
Yes. My main purpose this year was to make members think outside the box. What are the possibilities? What else could I be doing, or is there something new I'd like to try? Instead of just saying, oh yeah, I sing in the choir, I usher, and just check those boxes and away we go. But so I phrased things differently, such as I said, singing is my life. I will love to sing in the choir this year. Or maybe I'm outgoing, so I would really enjoy being a greeter before church services. Or I'm a geek. I'd like to maintain our church school website. You know, think about what your own personal skills are and how can I apply them for the Lord.
And then I also noticed that on each one of those, you included a time commitment to give people an idea of what exactly they were agreeing to and how much time would be involved.
Mm-hmm. Some people, a retired person, might have lots of hours to do a specific task. Somebody else, a busy mother that's working full-time and trying to take care of her family at home, too, maybe she's only got a couple of hours a week she could give. Or maybe it's only once a month that she would have any time, you know, that she could give. So this was to give them an idea. This is a small job, you can do it quickly, or this is an ongoing, you need to participate every month. you know, just to give them an idea.
And is this the first time you've kind of taken this different approach to your time and talent survey?
Yes, it is.
And so we're really curious then, once everyone has a chance and looks at your survey and sees how it's laid out and everything, did it make a difference to take this different approach and kind of put the time into phrasing the questions to be more engaging and including that time aspect to each of the questions?
I'd like to say we were inundated with completed forms, but that would not be Lutheran. People responded in the same old, I'll get around to it someday form. Mm-hmm. And we had the deadline was a week ago, and we received almost a third of them by then. And so we put out a separate plea with the newsletter when we sent it out on Friday. We asked the, you know, people to please hurry up and return it this Sunday. We did get a strong response on Sunday. So we're getting there. I think there's probably only a couple dozen more outstanding that are actually going to come in, but we're going to have to call them and beg them to please turn in their form. But we really only got responses from the people that are there all the time that always do the work. However, some people volunteered for things I never would have pegged them for.
Ah, there you
and
go.
And so that is good. They did think outside the box, or they said, oh, I can do this because it's only once every 3 months, or, you know, whatever it was that appealed to them. Mm-hmm. But people did volunteer for new things, so that was good.
That is very encouraging. Did you just give this out to the adults in your congregation, or did you include the teens as well?
We actually had, the main form was for adults, and we had an abbreviated form for those in sixth grade through college, because we figured college kids were really busy and didn't have much time, so we geared some of the younger tasks or that they could do without any adult supervision, such as rake the leaves in the church lawn, serve as a junior usher, that kind of thing, we put into the youth form.
That is great. We really appreciate you sharing this with us, Naomi, and also taking the time to talk to us today. And we wish you God's continued blessings out there at Mount Calvary. We'd be anxious to hear about other programs you have going on. So please stay in touch and keep us in the loop.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It was great to talk with Naomi, and she actually, after we were done with the conversation, she brought up another point that was worth mentioning in this show as well, and that was her concern about privacy.
Yeah.
Posting newsletters online and being sensitive to private information that may not be appropriate for sharing with the world via the internet. So she said that she had done some searching on her own name, trying to look up some genealogy information, and what came up but her church newsletter, because mm-hmm. her name is in the church newsletter as being the resource to send materials to for the newsletter. And it made her realize that the documents she's posting out on the web are searchable, and she needed to be sensitive to that. So
even,
that's another consideration as you
even if
develop
they're PDFs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, even PDFs are searchable. That's right. So thanks, Naomi, for the great conversation. We were wishing we were out in beautiful Reading with you as you described it to us, mm-hmm. and we hope you have continued blessings on your work there.
Moving on to ministry resources. We've got some interesting stuff today, Sally.
We do. This is an exciting podcast. I couldn't wait to talk about QR codes. And, you know, just right up my line, I saw a geeky little representation of text or something. I didn't really understand what it was. Posted out on Pastor John Buchholz's page. And Facebook, and I had to learn more. I had to ask, what is that? And I think I'd seen these maybe once before and heard that they were going to be kind of replacing barcoding as being the new way to kind of encrypt information or whatever for mm-hmm. scanning. But as of now, the geek world is in on the fun, because you can create your own QR or quick ref quick response codes via the web, and then you can post those in various places. So
yep.
An intriguing little topic, and like I said, I had to learn more, and both Pastor Buchholz and Debbie Rothy from Luther Prep School were willing to share some ideas about how they could be used.
QR codes are kind of the second generation. I don't know, Sal, if you remember the QCAT. That was a consumer-friendly little, actually it was in the shape of a cat, but it was a barcode scanner where you could run it across a barcode, hook it up to your computer via USB, and it would read that. And basically it was used by advertisers. And that was one of the reasons that I think that it failed, is that you'd run across a barcode in a magazine or something, and you would run across the barcode, and then it would take you to their site. You could get these QCode scanners QCAT scanners for free. And I repurposed it, one of them actually, when I built some software for Good Shepherd Lutheran School in Downers Grove, because we were barcoding our entire library. And we used one of these QCAT scanners to be a barcode reader. So we didn't have to pay the, $100 or $200 that it cost to do barcoding. And they used that for a number of years. Now, this is kind of the next level, where it's now a square barcode. And one of the neat ways that you can read these things is through smartphones. So, and I think that's kind of where they're getting some traction, especially with Android phones. They came out first for Android, and now I think it's on the iPhone and other phones as well, where you simply load up an app, you point your camera on your phone at this QR code, whether it's on screen or on paper, wherever it is. Sometimes I've even seen them on billboards in Times Square in New York, and it will give you either a message of some sort, a text message, or a URL that you can immediately go to. So I don't see anything going on here that's going to slow this down. It seems like a very neat and easy way to get people interested in your content.
And now that smartphones are more and more popular, having that ability to just scan it on the fly with your phone makes a lot of sense. So the next question in my mind was, how can it be used for ministry purposes?
This is ministry resources, after all.
That's right. And Pastor Buchholz and Debbie Rothy both had some good ideas. Pastor Buchholz said, they print their sermons and make them available within the congregation, and they also post them online, so they could put a link to where it's posted online in the print version of the sermon, and people could jump directly to the online version and thus be on their website and explore further on their website, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Rothy at Luther Prep talked about including one on their homecoming postcards and things like that that took people directly to the homecoming sign up website, where they could register for the various events that are available for that day. They also thought about putting them on the materials that they distributed, like maybe they had frisbees that they were throwing out in the stands during the football game or whatever it might be, that it have that QR code. That's something that the people are going to have and keep for a while. They could always reference back to their website and bring more traffic to their website or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to just be a link that you embed. It can be text of any kind. You can generate your own QR codes very easily, and we'll have a link in the show notes to a QR code generator website where you just put in the text or the link that you want a QR code generated from, and then you can save the image as it's generated. And I even found an online decoder. So you can take the images, if you don't have a smartphone with the scanner and the ability to convert the images with your phone, you can upload the images to a website and decode them online, and it'll tell you what the text or link is that's associated with that image. So sounds like a new area that we can use for ministry purposes.
Yep. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk a little more about QR codes, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I can't wait.
Okay. There are other ministry resources, though, that we want to make people aware of. And there's something happening in the world of the NIV. The NIV is the probably the translation of choice for 95% of our Wells congregations. And the version of the NIV that all of them are using is the one that was crafted or translated and published in 1984. Many of you might be aware that there is a retranslation or an updated version of the NIV coming out, NIV 2011. And what we ran across is that some of the online engines that provide Bible searching, like Bible Gateway, are using the new NIV.
That's right. As of November 1st, Biblica, which is the owner of the copyright or whatever, and Zondervan announced that the online release happened on BibleGateway.com and on Biblica.com. So two websites now have the electronic version of NIV 2011. Mm-hmm. And the thing that caught my eye was I did a search in Bible Gateway for a particular Bible verse, and I had NIV selected, and it came up with something I wasn't expecting. It was a slightly different translation of the verse than the one that I expected and have somewhat memorized, mm-hmm. or whatever. And in looking a little bit deeper, I realized that the default NIV translation now is NIV 2011. Mm-hmm. And you can switch back to NIV 1984 on BibleGateway.com, but it takes a little bit of work and
it's like selecting a different translation, right?
Exactly, a different version there. And so I thought it was especially important to make people aware that it's no longer the default search on Bible Gateway. And not that I'm for or against the new translation necessarily, I'm just saying that it was kind of surprising to me that it was a different translation than the one that we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, again, that's not the point of the show, is to debate translations. And I've heard that there are maybe some challenges with the NIV 2011 version. So just be aware of that as you're going online. And some people use, and a good reason that we're bringing it up in this show, so a lot of church secretaries or school secretaries will go to Bible Gateway to grab cut and paste for service folders or those kinds of things. So make sure that you're cutting and pasting the right translation, because it could, you know, the NIV 2011 could sneak in on you and you wouldn't even know it. And then you've got some issues. So it's interesting to me, Sally, sometimes you know, we get so used to the Web 2.0 world where you've got numbers behind names. So we have Office 2010, Office 2007. Now it seems like it's encroaching on the Bible translation world, where we now have the NIV 2011.
Mm-hmm. I guess one of the interesting things about the 2011, and a good reason that to take a look at it, is that the translation hasn't been available. Mm-hmm. You know, as it's been developed, I guess in the past, other translations were more open about the work that was being done. But this release electronically allows people really to get their first look at this new translation. And so I think the verdict's maybe still out, and mm-hmm. people are interested in taking a look. But just as a safety net, you know that the 1984 version is there.
All right. So let's move on to our picks of the week.
And my pick this week is an interesting infographic. It's of a speech given by David Pogue. And you guys may be familiar with David Pogue. He's a writer for the New York Times. He does a video podcast. He's on television. He's kind of all over the place as a kind of a tech guru. Very talented fellow. He wrote a book recently called The World According to Twitter, where he brought in 2,500 plus tweets from the community to different questions that he asked, and just lots and lots of talent there. And he recently was the keynote speaker at PubCon, which is a big event out in Las Vegas, and he gave a keynote speech about disruptive technology and, you know, how our world is changing and being influenced by the different Web 2.0 technology that's out there. And one of the people that was listening to his speech actually drew that speech into a graphic And so this is really impressive graphic that someone put together as they were listening to his keynote, and kind of goes through the whole Web 2.0 world and different effects and events that are going on in the world that we live on now. And it ended apparently with him performing a live version of a parody song that he did back in 2007 when the iPhone was released, called "I Want an iPhone." And just really funny. There's a link there, not to him doing it at PubCon, but a link to a YouTube video that was released back in 2007 when the iPhone came out. And it's just really hilarious. So if you're a David Pogue fan, or even if you aren't, you might want to check out this awesome infographic, kind of go through the points of his speech and watch the video, "I Want an iPhone." Very fun.
Thanks, Sally. Good stuff. I really like the infographic. That was exceedingly well done, and you know, it's kind of hand-drawn, which kind of adds to the appeal of it, and a lot of the things that he talked about would resonate with our audience, so take a look. My pick is something that I've been using now for, let's say, 6 to 8 months, and I haven't brought it up on the show because it's not necessarily specific to ministry, but I think long term, there's probably application here that congregations need to be aware of. And that is an internet streaming device that you plug into your TV and essentially watch the internet on your TV. And this is the Roku box, R-O-K-U. And when this little box came out, it was primarily a tool to allow you to stream Netflix movies and Netflix content. Those of you that don't know what Netflix is, it's a service that you pay about $10 a month, and you can have a DVD sent to you, and then you send it back and get it another one, and so on and so forth. But probably their most popular service is not any longer their DVD subscription service, but online streaming, where you can get many of the movies online, or television shows, those kinds of things. Right through the internet, and then if you have this Roku box, you basically have a little computer hooked up to your television via HDMI or component cables or whatever it is, and you're watching the internet through this Roku box. It's got a nice clean interface. The cost for the base version is $59.99 or $60. And all you need is an internet connection, and this will hook up either wired or wirelessly. The top of the line is all the way up to $100, and that'll give you a little bit better Wi-Fi and stream HD, as well as a USB port if you want to plug in a thumb drive or even, I think, an external hard drive that has photos or music or other video, so you could have your online video collection or your digitized video collection there that you would plug in. It's got a very simple remote. We have it in our living room, and kind of our approach, Sally, right now is to try and cut the cable cord if we can. We only have one TV right now that has basic cable, essentially just for a little while, and we're thinking that, you know, with the advent of internet-based TV, because you can get your television shows not in real time necessarily, but shortly thereafter. That seems to work well with our viewing habits, and the Roku box is a nice addition. What I'm also now seeing is that some churches are starting to publish Roku applications, because you can write Roku applications, and they can stream their services to the Roku box, or you can watch them in an archive fashion. So that's where the ministry, I think, segment fits in here, where I think this is where we are moving, that these online tools are a win for congregations as they can begin to broadcast their stuff in many different ways, as opposed to the more expensive channels, which have been prohibitive.
You know, Martin, it just never ceases to amaze me. I remember going to a communication conference, and I think maybe it was back in 2004 or 2005, and someone there was talking about getting on cable TV, you know, and having your own cable TV channel.
There, yeah.
And it's like, so yesterday, and it was just a few years ago, but now you know, the internet has just opened all that up to us, and the thought that we can stream right there to someone's TV and do it for such an affordable or even free price tag is just an amazing thought.
Yep.
And a really wonderful use of today's technology to further the gospel ministry.
Yep. So that's the Roku Box, ROKU.com.
Very good. I'm just reminded that I also am a huge HGTV fan, and I love my home improvement shows and everything. And I just recently saw an ad on HGTV that you could get their app for your iPod,
mm-hmm.
And watch HGTV on your iPod. So
yep.
More and more people are devising these custom applications to deliver their video content, and we're just going to see a real advent, I'm sure, in that area as time passes.
All right. Now we're going to return to our QR code conversation, and we've got a little contest cooking up in your little head there, Sally, don't we?
In my little head, yeah. And I just had to latch on to this QR code thing,
uh-huh.
And I know what technique.
And you won't let it go.
That's right. So we have devised a contest to take us through Christmas. It is our Wells Tech Christmas 2010 scavenger hunt, and we're going to be releasing a new QR code from now through December 15th on each weekly show. And following the December 15th show, you will have all the clues that you need to solve our mystery, and we'll put a sign-up sheet out there, and you can give us the answer to our mystery, and then we'll have a drawing on December 22nd, and one lucky winner will win a $25 Cafe Press gift certificate where they can buy great Wells Tech merchandise, which I'm sure is at the top of everyone's Christmas wish list.
Absolutely.
So we're coming through for you and giving you the chance to win some Cafe Press merchandise and have a little fun along the way. And what we've done is we've devised a QR code for this week and the next four following weeks. So there'll be five of these all together. And we're going to sprinkle them throughout the show notes, so it'll be a little bit of a hunt for you. But we're going to give you this first one right here on today's show.
We're going to throw them a softball, yes.
That's right. So all you need to do is visit our show notes website at wellstech.wells.net. And grab that QR code. We'll have a link there that you can decipher it online, or you can scan it with your smartphone and read the first clue to our great Wells Tech Mystery Scavenger Hunt 2010. And so check it out. Play along with us. It should be a lot of fun. We'll see how many geeky mystery solvers there are in our listening audience.
And remember, with QR codes, you need a smartphone, or you can grab Sally's online QR code reader, and that'll be in the show notes as well.
That's right.
Community feedback.
Well, this week we're keeping it simple. We have just one comment that we're going to share this week. It's from Kevin Smith from Christ in Zumbrota, Minnesota. And Kevin wrote to tell us about a church basement project that they recently completed. He says their basement is typical of many older church basements with post and suspended ceilings and cement walls. I think maybe he was looking in the St. John's Sleepy Eye church basement when he described that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they had some acoustic problems down there. It was difficult for people to hear during Bible class and that kind of thing. So they recently installed a cicada sound astronaut, which is a self-powered speaker. And they used a ceiling mount kit and plugged in some different feeds. They have the pastor's microphone plugged in. They have a feed where they can actually connect an MP3 player and play music over the sound system. And they also can connect right into the computer that's available. So if someone's projecting a PowerPoint and there's some kind of sound with that, then they'll be able to pick that up with the speaker system as well. So Kevin sent us links where you can learn more about it. And we've actually posted all that out on our Wells Tech Wiki. He also sent us a link to monoprice.com where he says he's found really good deals on cabling as well. So we thank you for that, Kevin, and sharing your experience. And we'd love to hear from others who are doing similar type projects and what's working for you guys. So
Thank you, Kevin. And monoprice.com is a great site. Anybody looking for cables, do not go into Best Buy and get it, buy an HDMI cable. Go to a place like Monoprice and you'll pay a fraction, you know, of the price. You just have to order it online and get it. They do exactly the same thing. So, Sally, I've about had it. Not with the conversation, but my voice is fading fast. And that's good because we are at the segment of the show where we talk about next week. What are we doing next week?
We are looking forward to next week's show. We're going to be talking with Vicar Donald Tilbury, who's serving this year at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. And they are doing some really exciting things with video conferencing for their catechism class, including some students from Iowa in their catechism class. So we'll be anxious to hear how they're pulling that off. And he's got a little extra something that he's going to share as well about mapping, which is really impressive.
I'm excited
as
about
well.
This, too.
So,
yeah.
Good stuff. We'll probably talk some more about web conferencing in our discussion time. So tune in next week for that show.
Okay. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Our Wells featured artist this week is Kevin Lersch. And we're coming up on Advent here real quick. So this is very timely. The song is called, interestingly enough, Advent Medley from his album, O Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, putting up with my froggy voice, and hopefully the conversation was pithy enough for you, and we look forward to talking with you next week.
Branches growing of loveliest form and grace, as prophets sang foreknowing, it springs from Jesse's race and bears one little flower in midst of coldest winter. At deepest midnight hour. Of the Father's love begotten, ere the worlds began to be, He is Alpha and Omega. The ending he of the things that are, that have been, and that future years shall see evermore and evermore. Comfort, comfort all my people. Speak of peace, so says our God. Comfort those who sit in darkness, groaning from their sorrow's load. Speak to all Jerusalem of the peace that waits for them. Tell them that their sins I cover, that their warfare now is over. John the Baptist's voice is crying in the desert far and near, calling people to repentance, for the kingdom now. Let your hearts be true and high.